Well, good day to you, and welcome from BibleStudy.online, a new endeavor from Job 2:10 Ministries. The mission is to use the local church to start small groups around the world using Zoom and other technologies to interact with people on a continuous basis. You have probably heard of or even been on mission trips where people go for days or a week and pour into people and communities around the world. I've been on those as well. This is a little different because instead of spending thousands of dollars to go somewhere for a few days, we are trying to spend money on video conferencing platforms and social media to target areas around the world and start meeting with groups of believers who would have never met in any other way. And much like Paul and his letters to the churches, we are able to visit together across the globe on a regular basis. The goal? Disciples. The means? The internet. Why? Jesus said, "Go and make disciples." This is a new project, and we don't know where it's going to end up, but you are welcome to join the ride with us. The lessons you'll be hearing are coming from the Gospel of Mark, and they are from the very first group of meetings, with a group of dedicated men coming from all around Kenya. Enjoy and listen to how they change throughout the weeks to come.
All right, so took a pretty large section of scripture this week. I'm going to try to do the whole chapter of verse 5. And so it's only two stories in it, though. And the first story begins with Jesus healing a man with a demon. And so I will just take off right here. Mark 5, 1 through 7. They came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gerasenes. And when Jesus had stepped out of the boat, immediately there met him a man out of the tombs, a man with an unclean spirit. And he lived among the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. And he had often been bound with shackles, but he had wrenched the chains apart and broken the shackles in pieces. No one had the strength to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs on the mountains, he was always crying out and cutting himself with stones. And he saw Jesus from afar, and he ran and fell down before him. And crying out in a loud voice, he said, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High? I adjure you, by God, do not torment me." I wanted to, instead of doing the whole verse at once, I wanted to point out some characters here. We have two characters. We have Jesus and the demon-possessed man, but we also have two groups of people. We have the disciples who are with him, and we also have the local people that we see here have been trying to bind him with chains and shackles, unsuccessfully, might I add. Now, nobody had the ability to, or the strength to control this man who was filled with demons. People had tried. We see here they tried to use chains. They tried to use everything they had as humans, and yet they were unable to subdue him, unable to conquer him. And it's interesting, if you can think back to Mark chapter 4, the very thing that Jesus had just finished was calming the sea when the disciples were afraid for their lives. And now they step off the boat and they're confronted with this man that nobody has been able to stop or slow down. And I don't know if the disciples, I wonder about them. I wonder if they were terrified when they saw this somewhat crazy man coming at him who had been cutting himself and screaming. Maybe he had chains still tied around him that he had already broken. And I wonder, were the disciples terrified by this, thinking, "Oh man, this guy's coming and there's no way that we can do anything about it"? Or were they thinking of immediately the night before, when they saw this whole storm, hurricane, thunderstorm that was happening on the Sea of Galilee, and Jesus just said with the word, "Be still." And they knew, and I wonder if they knew that, okay, God can handle the storms, the winds, the rains. This is going to be nothing. If God can handle the storms, he can handle this man as well. And so I was interested in that, is I wonder what the disciples' attitudes were. Now, you know, most of the time we see that they had little faith. So I would tend to lean towards they were a little bit frightened when they saw this man running at them. But we'll see if their what ended up happening with them. So in Mark, continuing here in verse 8 through 14, "For he was saying, 'Come out of the man, you unclean spirit.' And Jesus asked him, 'What is your name?' And he replied, 'My name is Legion, for we are many.' And he begged him earnestly not to send him out of the country. Now a great herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside, and they begged him, saying, 'Send us to the pigs, let us enter them.' So he gave them permission, and the unclean spirits came out of the man and entered the pigs, and the herd, numbering about 2,000, rushed down into a steep bank into the sea and drowned in the sea. The herdsmen fled and told it to the city and in the country, and people came out to see what had happened." And we see here that the demons wanted to stay in this land. And I did a little digging in this land that they were in. And obviously, the Jewish men that were living here, the Jewish people that were living here, they were not following God's laws, because we know the Old Testament law that the Jewish people were forbidden to be around pigs or swine. They were forbidden to eat pigs. And here we have a huge herd of pigs, over 2,000 of them, that is here. And I started looking around, and these were a group of Jewish people that had almost abandoned the Jewish faiths and traditions, and were over here in this area called the Decapolis, and they were kind of living as Gentiles. They were living as the Greeks and the Romans, focused on making money, and not really listening to the will of God, the word of God. So that's why the pigs are here. And that also leads me to wonder, or leads me to think, that this may be why the demon did not want to leave the country. He's found a place here where the people have abandoned God, so to speak, it would seem, and the spirit doesn't want to leave. It's like the perfect place for a demon to be lurking around, looking for people to enter into and to make mischief. And it's just, it's a prime ground for a demon to be in. He asked Jesus, "Don't make me leave here." And he asked for the pigs. And I'm not sure why Jesus allowed it. I have ideas and some things that I think, okay, what could have caused Jesus to allow this to happen? But I have some possibilities. Perhaps Jesus wanted the people of the town to see that the amount of power that was inside of this man could still be stopped by Jesus. Perhaps Jesus was trying to show them, hey, this man that you guys tried everything that you could, you tried to get him subdued and calmed down, and you couldn't do it. You failed. But God can. I can. So I don't know if maybe he was trying to get them to see that. Perhaps it was a form of punishment for breaking the Jewish law, to remind them that these pigs were not welcome there. That's not as possible or probable to me. But regardless of why he did it, it definitely showed what this demon, or this group of demons, Legion, was able to do. It also shows that the Legion, they were looking for death and destruction, because Jesus didn't give them stipulations on what to do with the swine, the pigs. He just said, yes, you may enter them. And Legion immediately killed the pigs, which means that Legion would have probably done the same thing with this man if Jesus would have allowed it. If Jesus wouldn't have held him back, Legion would have probably killed this man as well. And it shows us just how strong those demons were, especially when, and what they were capable of when they were no longer restrained by Jesus. And it reminds me of Satan is after our destruction. That's the ultimate goal of Satan and demonic forces, is to ruin us. And in John chapter 10, verse 10, we get the famous verse that the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. And so we see that we have Satan looking to destroy life, and we have Jesus here to rescue life and to make it more fulfilling. Then we go on to the last couple verses of this story. Excuse me. "And the people came to see what had happened, and they came to Jesus and saw the demon-possessed man, and the one who had the legion sitting there, clothed in his right mind, and they were afraid. And those who had seen it described to them what had happened to that the demon-possessed man and the pigs, and they began to beg Jesus to depart from their region. As he was getting into the boat, the man who had been possessed with the demons begged him that he might be with him, and he did not permit him, but said, "Go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has shown mercy on you." And when he went away, he began to proclaim in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and everyone marveled. We get a look here at the local people. The local people had an opportunity to come know this amazing man who was able to save this man who had had a demon that nobody could stop. They had an opportunity to get to know Jesus, and they did not take the opportunity. Instead, they rejected Jesus. They chose instead, they saw the loss of property. They saw that Jesus was here, and what became this one man who had a demon, now it's cost us however much money, 10 or 2,000 pigs would have been. And so instead of realizing what eternal salvation this man had gotten, they were focused on the monetary destruction that Jesus brought on them. And it's a shame, because Jesus showed up, these people couldn't get beyond their money and possessions, or maybe it was the fact that they were facing a power that was so much greater than anything they possessed that it made them insecure and afraid of Jesus, but they begged Jesus to leave. They didn't even seem concerned that this man who had been possessed was now free. He was now free from that possession. And this man, we notice, he looks at it and he's like, this Jesus guy, he saved me. He gave me my life back, and I want to go with him. But I love that Jesus told him, "No, I set you free. Go tell your friends what I've done for you." And this man, he did just that. He goes throughout his home region. He told people about Jesus. And when Jesus comes back later in Mark chapter 7, we find out that there are crowds waiting for him in the Decapolis. And I just wonder if it was this man, because he was faithful to God, if he was faithful in the message that Jesus gave him to go tell his friends, and if because of that, he is the reason that all of these crowds were waiting for Jesus when he came back a couple of chapters later to this region. This man bloomed where he was planted. He was planted in not good soil, and Jesus said, "Work right here," and he did. And I also thought about, if this man had family, and he was going back for the first time to see his wife or his children, and he had been this crazy man who was violent before, and he's coming back home, and his wife and kids, they run and hide, but then when they see him, they would have instantly known the change. The local people here, they instantly knew the change, because they says that he was sitting there. And before, remember, he was roaming throughout the tombs and he was screaming and cutting himself. And now he's sitting there, fully clothed, in his right mind. And just the drastic change. And I wish that more of us had that drastic change when we came from being creatures and people of darkness, coming into the light, coming into Jesus and his love. I wish we had more of that in us. Now, we go on to our second verses and our second story, which begins in verse 21, and it's Jesus healing two people. He's going to heal a woman, and he's going to heal Jairus' daughter. So let's look in verse 21 through 27. When Jesus had crossed again in a boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered around him, and he was beside the sea. Then came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored of him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her, that she may be well and live." And he went with him, and a great crowd followed him and thronged about him. And there was a woman who had had a discharge of blood for 12 years, and who had suffered much under many physicians, and had spent all she had, and was no better, but rather grew worse. And she had heard reports of Jesus, and came up behind him in the crowd, and touched his garment." Let's start off with Jairus. Jairus here is labeled as a ruler of the synagogue. And if you remember, back in chapter 2 of Mark, we're seeing rulers of the synagogue that are basically out to get Jesus. They have almost cast him out. They rejected his teaching. And so Jesus takes it into homes from that point forward, working there. When he was in Capernaum. And they were looking for a way to get rid of Jesus. But now this man, Jairus, he's run out of options. He has a little girl that's sick, and he's willing to do whatever it takes to save his little girl. And the way he sees it is Jesus is that answer. There's nobody else that can help him. No amount of praying that he has done has helped. There's no physicians that are going to help his little girl. And his little girl is almost at the point of dying, and he's run out of options. And he looks at Jesus. And I want to encourage you and I here today to not let that be us. Don't wait until we're on our deathbed or somebody else is on their deathbed before we then turn to Jesus. Instead, make him the first place we turn. When things first start looking bad, or we first start getting concerned or anxious or worried or depressed or anything like that, look to Jesus first, not at the last resort. Our only hope is Jesus. And is also, we are just like this little girl. We are dead with no hope until Jesus comes and rescues us. So we were like that little girl. And now we need to be like her father, who is bringing people to Jesus. You know, Jairus goes and gets Jesus. He's going to take him to his little girl. And so it's a beautiful picture of what we should be doing. We should be bringing Jesus to a lost and dying world. The people around us in our lives, we need to be telling them about Jesus, because we have the answer. We have the anecdote for their sin problem, and it's Jesus Christ. And then we have this lady who has been suffering for 12 years, and she sneaks up behind Jesus and she just touches his cloak, touches his robe, and immediately she becomes well. Now, in the custom of the Jewish tradition, her doing what she did, she would have just made Jesus unclean. She would have, by touching him, her sickness, in a sense, in the way the Jewish ways worked, would have transferred to Jesus, making him unclean. So she was taking a huge risk doing this. I wonder if she was sneaking to try to touch him so that nobody would notice, so that he wouldn't have to know that he was unclean. But obviously, she had realized she had no hope either. The only thing she could do was to go to Jesus. And so we see there's two types of seekers. You have the little girl, who she's not looking for Jesus. Instead, somebody's bringing her Jesus. But there's also people in the world who are wandering around looking for the answer. They're wandering around looking to see who can tell them the answer, who can make them well. And we see those two pictures here. Let's keep going in the story. Verse 28, "For she said, 'If I touch even his garments, I'll be made well.' And immediately the flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. And Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone out from him, immediately turned to the crowd and said, 'Who touched my garments?' And the disciples said to him, 'You see the crowds pressing around you, and yet you say, "Who touched me?" And he looked around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, 'Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease.'" This is an amazing story, because Jesus was so in tune with God's power that he could feel it pass from him. Nobody had to ask him for healing. Nobody had to say, "Hey, Jesus, I'm about to touch you so that I may be healed." But he felt the power leave because he was that in tune with God. He knew what power felt like. And with the crowd all around him, one person drew power from him. And you got to think, there's other people surely that were touching Jesus. They were bumping him with their shoulders, or the crowd was pressing around. And yet she's the only one. She's the only one that, when she touched him, power came from him to her. See, she had the faith, and Jesus had the will to make her or allow her to receive this healing power. And Jesus does not treat her harshly, but is more amazed that she had enough faith to touch him. And even Jairus asked Jesus to come touch his daughter. Jesus could have just said the words. We're going to see this in future stories where Jesus can just speak and people are healed in different places. And yet this woman, she knew that if she could just get close enough to touch Jesus, she would be fine. So here we go, getting close to the end here. So in verse 35, while he was still speaking, there came a ruler from the house who said, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the ruler of the synagogue, this is Jairus, "Do not fear, only believe." And he allowed no one to follow except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. And they came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and Jesus saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. And when he entered, he said to them, "Why are you making such a commotion and weeping? The child is not dead, but sleeping." This took a tremendous amount of faith. When I'm thinking about putting myself in Jairus's shoes, for Jairus, he's now demonstrating that he has a even stronger amount of faith. And maybe it was due to the woman that he just witnessed be healed by Jesus, because if he brings Jesus to his house and Jesus can't heal his daughter, then Jairus looks like a lunatic who is just grasping at anybody to try to bring his daughter back from the dead now, because he can't cope with his own grief, is what it's going to seem like. If Jesus doesn't raise her from the dead. Now, he and Jesus are not disturbed by what the people around them are doing or what they're saying, because the people had already, they've already pronounced it. She's dead, and they've already gone into mourning and preparing for the funeral services by weeping and wailing, and yet Jesus and Jairus, they don't stop. They go right in and they say, "She's not dead, she's sleeping." Jesus is going to heal her, and we can't be held back or fearful of what people around us say or what they do. We are only required to trust God and what His Word says. That's enough. We can't let the people around us slow us down or hinder us from doing God's will. Last group of verses, verse 40, "And they laughed at him, but he put all of them outside and took the child's father and mother and those who were with him and went into where the child was. Taking her by the hand, he said to her, 'Talitha kumi,' which means, 'Little girl, I say to you, arise.' And immediately the little girl got up and began walking, for she was about 12 years of age. And they were immediately overcome with amazement. And he strictly charged them that no one should know this, and told them to give her something to eat." We get here. This little girl was 12 years old, and she died. The lady just before this had been suffering from her disease for 12 years. And both of those are horrible. A lady suffering for 12 years or a little girl dying at the age of 12, neither one of those are good things. Those are both bad things that are a result of our broken world. But their healing was not the sole purpose of the story. Okay, the purpose of this story is not for us to walk away thinking, "Oh, if I have enough faith, I can be healed of sicknesses, or my family members can be brought back from the dead." I mean, God can do whatever He wants to, but I don't think that's the point of these stories here. Instead, I think Jesus is the purpose of these stories. And think about this. That lady had been suffering for at least 10 years, and maybe even 11 or 12 at this point, before Jesus even started his ministry. So even before Jesus is baptized, she's already suffering. She's already going through that suffering. And only because of her suffering that she went through are we still talking about her today. The little girl experienced death, and her family lost her. Why? They didn't know. They didn't know why they were losing their little girl of 12, but because Jesus and His glory was made known through their sufferings, we are still talking about their story today. And I think a lot of times that we, when we're in the midst of a hard time or in the midst of a struggle, whether it's a physical sickness or there's a death to someone we love, or it's a financial struggle, or maybe it's just a crisis of not knowing what we're supposed to do next, when we're in the middle of that, it's very hard for us to see the outcome, because we don't know the future, and it's very hard to, for us to see and understand why. But a lot of times when we get beyond it, we look back and it's pretty clear to us. And for me, it's always looking at it and seeing, okay, how did God use that for His glory? How did God use that for His glory to either, maybe it was to sharpen me and make me better so that I can do more of His glory now, or maybe it was all for His glory then. And we must remember that God is good and that He loves us. Therefore, even our suffering is worth it because He will use it for His glory and our good. And we need to have the faith that we trust Him with things that we can't even fathom the outcome. I'm reminded of my sons. I have to get on to them because they are, my youngest one now has found electrical outlets and he wants to put metal things in them, and I have to catch him and stop him. And he thinks that I'm being the meanest person in the world. He cries and screams and throws a little fit. But I know what he does not, that this little bit of pain that I'm causing him right now is keeping him from a much greater pain. And God is looking at us and he's like, you guys have this suffering that we're going through right now, but you need to remember that God sees everything far beyond anything that we can see. And so we need to trust him that he sees those things and he's working them all for his glory and our good.
Thank you for listening. If you would like to find out more about what we're doing and check out what we're doing, go to our website, BibleStudy.online, or come join our group on Facebook. You can find us by searching for Bible Study Online, numeral 1. Thank you for sharing your time with us, and please pray for us as we continue in this endeavor to stay focused on Jesus and His message. Have a great day.